Back to left corner to Aguila. Aguila the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going on this Thursday, April 25th. We get things going on this hour of Flames Talk. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're hanging out in our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio for this hour of Flames Talk. Hello, Vic.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing?
Doing well. Doing very well. And now a week into the offseason. The Flames played their final game of the regular season 1 week ago on April 18th. Here we are on April 25th. And now the offseason officially a week old for the Calgary Flames. You know, as we've gone through the last week here, and honestly, we've been talking about bigger picture things and focusing on the future for quite some time now. But you know, over the last number of months, as we try to determine how the Flames are going to go about their retool and what decisions they're going to make, how they're going to try to get their team back to competitiveness, one of the things that we've heard mentioned a lot, or one of the comparisons we've heard a lot, is the Dallas Stars and how the Stars very quickly went from being kind of a middle of the road at best team that was in or out of the playoffs. They'd missed the playoffs for quite some time, and they went from that very quickly to being a high-end team in the NHL. Now, I know that the timing isn't great right now because they're now down 0-2 to the Vegas Golden Knights, and the series now shifting back to Vegas with Dallas in the 0-2 hole. But the Stars are considered, or were considered, coming into this postseason before they got just an absolutely rotten draw as the number one seed in the Western Conference. But they were considered by many to be a Stanley Cup favorite. I believe that a couple of times when I was asked on Flames Talk postgame who I've got for the Stanley Cup, I chose Carolina and Dallas as the two teams that I saw going there. Now, again, timing not great, but they finished 1 point back of number one overall in the NHL. And Vicks, they don't look like they're going anywhere anytime soon. Regardless of how round one against Vegas ends up going, the Stars don't look like they're a team that is ready to go away anytime soon. And even Craig Conroy brought Dallas up as a potential model and used them as an example on Locker Cleanout Day on Friday and talked about them as something that they have their eye on when he was asked about the difference between a rebuild and a retool. Listen to the GM. This goes back to Friday and Locker Cleanout Day.
When you look at a rebuild, you tear it right to the ground. You get rid of every player you have. You don't have veteran players. You're not looking to spend money. You know, you're not looking to win. You want to lose. You want to try to get that high pick, the first overall pick. And in reality, some teams can do it. Some teams want to do it. That's the way to do it. I think in a Canadian market, with the players we have under contract with our core group, that doesn't make any sense for us. You know, for us, we're saying, okay, look at that Dallas model. Look how they did it. I guess that's a retool. They made draft picks. They brought in players. They added a few veterans here and there. You know, I think you look at that team, and I think they're right in the kind of win now mode, and they did it over a short period of time. And they had a great draft, and it might take a little bit of time, but we have some very good players in this team and young guys that have taken steps, and we need to continue to take another step.
So that's Craig Conroy on Friday, Locker Cleanout Day. And again, right at the end there, last half of that clip talked about the Dallas Stars. So you and I both did some research, and Vix did some real good research. I did more rudimentary research. Vix went right into this when diving into just how realistic, how doable what Dallas has done really is. So for me, this all began a little bit less than a decade ago. The 2015 NHL draft is where they got their first kind of cornerstone for where they are right now. Obviously, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and those guys were either drafted or acquired earlier, but this retool process They took Roope Hintz in the second round in 2015. That was kind of their first cornerstone guy that is a big part of what they are now. Then 2 years later, 2017 draft, that's the one that everybody talks about and the one that you did your research on. Miro Heiskanen goes third overall. Jake Ottinger goes 26th overall. And Jason Robertson in the second round goes 39th overall. All three players, franchise cornerstones, first three picks, three in a row. Like that automatically changes a franchise when it goes that way. And then in subsequent years, they've also added players like Thomas Harley. He's a regular on their blue line. We know what Wyatt Johnston's doing, and Logan Stankoven in the second round a few years ago is turning into a really nice-looking player as well. But it's that 2017 draft class that did it. That's the catalyst. That's the benchmark. That's what really started to rapidly shift this thing for the Stars. So you went and you did some research and... Give us what you dove into as you looked at what Dallas was able to do in 2017.
Okay, so just to reiterate a little bit, Heiskanen, third overall pick, is a number one defenseman, was seventh in Norris voting last year. Ottinger's number one goalie, was fifth in Vezina voting last year. Robertson's a two-time 40-goal scorer with 41 in 2021, 22 and 46 in 22-23. And when you hit on consecutive picks like that in the draft, that is a path-altering sort of draft. That is the thing of scouts lore, where if you're able to hit on three consecutive picks and your top three picks in a manner that literally give you a franchise player at each position, that is things that make careers, to be perfectly honest. So I went back just to see how rare that instance is, where you're able to pull out three high-end players, three quote-unquote franchise-defining players. And to be honest, I didn't really find anything to the extent of the Dallas Stars. Now, I did 2010 to 2020 because I just looking over the course of the last decade, I don't think 21 to 23 is fair because that's too recent. You haven't given players any sort of real runway to develop to become those impact players in their organization. But from 2010 to 2017, there were 30 teams in the NHL. That's eight draft classes. In 2018 to 2020, Vegas was introduced, so there were 31 teams over those three drafts. So when you calculate it all out, and Pat, if I say this incorrectly, I want you to correct me, because when we were texting back and forth, there was something a little bit lost in translation. But over the course of those 11 drafts, there were 333 individual team results. So that is calculating 30 for each team from 2010 to 2017, 31 for each team from 2018 to 2020. Dallas far and away, and I sent you the examples, Dallas for me far and away the smash home run hitter in that. But I found seven other instances that could sort of relate to that.
Okay, so what do we got?
So we got the Panthers in 2013 when they picked Barkov number 2, Mackenzie Weegar 206, and this is a little bit of leeway, Josh Brown at 152, but he played a whole bunch of games. I wouldn't say he's franchise defining, but very, very serviceable. Carolina Hurricanes in 2015, Noah Hanifin at 5, Sebastian Aho at 35, Nick Waugh at 96.
Okay.
Carolina
Hurricanes. Two of those guys went on.
And then here's what makes the Dallas thing so special is all three guys are still there.
Yep.
And so you've got the Hurricanes again in 2010 with Jeff Skinner, Justin Falk, Freddie Anderson. Capitals in 2012 with Philip Forsberg, who was flipped almost immediately for Martin Irat in one of the worst future for current player now deals in NHL history, but you got Forsberg.
That was a real beauty.
Yeah, Forsberg, Tom Wilson, Chandler Stephenson. The Ducks is the one I would put closest to in 2011, if you'll just let me run through that, with Rickard Rakell, John Gibson, William Karlsson, who I forgot was a Ducks draft pick, to be perfectly honest with you, and Josh Manson. But all due respect to those four, none of them are a Robertson, Heiskanen, or an Ottinger in terms of franchise defining, at least for me. So there are a couple other examples, but we're talking, even if you want to lump those in with the Stars 2017, that's an 8 out of 333 sort of hit rate when you're able to pull at least three players that are that impactful for your organization that you can say this draft kind of turned our trajectory for us.
So, and that's a 2.4% chance of having a draft like that. And the Dallas one, of all the ones that you mentioned, is the
clear,
best
clear cut
one of
for
the
me.
Now, that Ottawa one in 2020.
And we'll see how that one plays out. That was Tim Stützle at number 3, Jake Sanderson at number 5. So you're talking two top 5 picks there. You better hit on those. and then Ridley Gregg at number 28. So you're even in that instance, you're talking three firsts, whereas Dallas needed a second to still execute there.
Now, and just for sake of argument, the last time the Flames had three first-round picks was 2013, and they hit on one of them. Now, that is, you can be critical of what the Flames did. You can be critical of, because they needed to do better. Unfortunately, Morgan Klimchuk and Emile Poirier just weren't it. And Sean Monahan obviously turned into a very good player and a big part of this organization. But that's a 2.4% chance of being able to hit something big like that. Now, the Flames definitely have the capital to be able to put together a really nice draft. For instance, let's take a look at the 2024 NHL draft. Guaranteed, they've got five picks in the first three rounds. That's a guarantee. Depending on how things go, they could have six or seven, depending on the way some of the conditional picks work. They could have six in the first three rounds if Vegas doesn't beat Dallas, if Vegas doesn't get past this round. There's also another potential one in there if Vancouver makes the Western Conference Final, a fourth-round pick turns in to a third-round pick. So there are still some there's still some possibilities for more, but that's a nice start, right? You got to have the assets, or you got to have the capital. You got to have the picks to be able to turn something into a really good draft, right?
Well, the majority of those names and positions that I just mentioned, whether it was the Panthers, the Carolina Hurricanes, Washington Capitals, the odds are that two of the three guys named were a first-round pick and almost unanimously across the board was a top 10 pick. So you need to be able to, I mean, this isn't anything shocking, but you need to be able to hit on your high first-round picks. And they generally have a very high success rate of playing in the NHL to varying degrees of impact. But the fact of the matter remains is you need to make sure that if you've got a first round pick and it's in the top 10, that is a player that can develop into an impact player for you. The odds drop once you get out of the top 10 and once you're looking at, you know, late teens or into the 20s. But the fact of the matter remains there are still players to be found at those spots. And then once you get beyond the first round, second, third, fourth round, if you can find seventh round picks, whatever the case may be, you need those assets in order to be able to find it. So it's a law of averages. It's the more bullets you have in the chamber, the more likely you are to hit the target.
Now, the Flames have put together some pretty decent drafts. 2015 comes to mind, where they were able to get Rasmus Anderson, Oliver Shillington, Andrew Mangiapane all in the same draft.
And that's great because they didn't have a first round that year.
They traded their first round pick that year for Dougie Hamilton. So they were able to make really good on that 2015 draft. And now, is Anderson Haskinen? No. But and is there a Jason Robertson-type player in there? No. I mean, Jason Robertson's got 50-goal potential in him. Maybe not to the same extent, but there is recent-ish evidence that it can be done. You can get three pretty good NHLers, even if you only have five picks like the Flames had in that year's draft. So it just underlines the importance of how they have to go into Vegas in 2 months' time at the 2024 NHL draft, and they've got to make this a really, really good draft. They've got to hit on a few picks in the 2024 draft. They've got two first-round picks guaranteed, they've got two second-round picks guaranteed, and then they have some floating third-round picks in there as well. And when Craig Conroy joined us on Friday in the Hot Stove Lounge for his exclusive sit-down chat with us, I asked him, like, okay, now you're going in, do you feel the pressure, any more pressure that you've got to nail this draft? Like, this one's got to be a home run. And I like the way that Craig went about the answer in terms of how they're approaching this draft. Really not any different than how they've approached other drafts.
I want to nail every draft.
Yeah.
I want to nail every draft. You know, where did I make what you're trying to do with the ones you didn't nail the drafts? Where do we make the mistakes? How do we get better? Why did we miss on a player? We didn't like his skating. We didn't like, what didn't we like about him? Maybe his size. Maybe, you know, we had two wingers and we should have went another winger. Instead, we went with a defenseman. And then you look and you're like, well, we made the wrong choice on that one. You know, so you want to just dial in, you know, the whole thing is you want to have all the information. You don't want to be blindsided by anything. You want to go in and really have your list locked down. And then that way, if you want to move up or you want to, you know, especially having more picks, if there's an opportunity, it's hard to move up nowadays. People just don't want to do it. But, you know, but at least have those conversations and know, okay, is there an opportunity for us to move? If this guy's available, can we move up? And it's a fun time. I will admit that might be the most fun in this job, you know, the draft. But we want to nail every pick. And that's what I said. You know, it's not the first pick. You want to nail the last pick you have, too, and everything in between. I mean, you look at our fourth-round pick, Pospisil, this year.
Yeah.
That was our first pick in that draft, and it's been a real good pick. I mean, it took some time. Again, we have to be patient, and it takes a little time, but now you know, what we thought he was going to be, here he is doing it. It's exciting when you have something in your mind, and then all of a sudden, all these years later, you see it on the ice, and it's exciting.
So that was Craig Conroy when he joined us on Friday talking about this upcoming draft. And honestly, that's what you want to hear, because I don't think you can go into a draft feeling like, oh, we got to make this one better than normal, because you need to prepare for, and it's, you know, Craig's been involved in drafting and being a big part of the lead up to an NHL draft for quite some time. Pretty much ever since he moved into management, that's been a big part of what he does. And their philosophy, especially once Brad Treliving took over, their philosophy has been, you know, we want to put the exact same amount of effort, time into a first round pick as we do a seventh round pick. And that, I think, has served them well, because after Treliving's first draft, which was 2014, which I still contend was one that was more under Brian Burke's influence as opposed to Brad and his new mandates for scouting, because he came in so late in the game. From 2015 on, they did pretty well when it comes to their drafting, and they've had some good drafts. They've been able to get some players that are in the organization, and so that's impressive. Now it's under Craig Conroy. This is his first draft with a full lead up as the general manager, because again, he came in and took over the job late in the game last year. I don't think they need to go out and replicate what happened in 2017 for the Dallas Stars. I don't think you need, like, that to me is not something that is mandatory to quickly turn your organization and to get you to a more competitive spot quicker than normal. But I do think you need to go out. What I think needs to happen with two first round picks and four in the top, whatever it is, 64 picks, they have got to make sure. And what I think will determine whether or not this draft is a successful one for the future of the organization, they have to find one core player. They have got to make that first round pick, whether it's number 9 overall or wherever it ends up being. That guy, doesn't matter if it's number 9 and not number 2. That guy has got to be a cornerstone franchise player for this organization. Blue line, center ice, whatever. And then find one other guy. And if you can come out of this draft with one cornerstone guy and another NHLer, then I think, yeah, with some more first-round picks in and some more draft capital that you've accumulated in the 25 and 26 draft, I think that's a good start. So I don't look at it and say, how do the Flames replicate what the Dallas Stars did 7 years ago? I look at it more as, okay, what Dallas did, that's kind of your number one high bar in terms of how you do it, but you got to go out and make sure that you get your cornerstone player in this year's draft.
I mean, like Craig Conroy said, every draft you want it to be your best draft ever. Expecting it and being honest with yourself and saying that we're going to pull three franchise players out of any one draft, and running through that list that I mentioned earlier, Dallas is the top of the class at that. So you're talking one in 333 drafts. Like, you can't be banking on just doing what the Dallas Stars did at the draft. And that's not, we can get into it a little more maybe now or later, but that's not the full Dallas model. It was bringing in guys that could perform on entry-level contracts to supplant and help lessen the burden of the vets that maybe cashed in on a big contract but weren't necessarily fulfilling it. There is just constantly rolling over youth into the organization so that you're walking that balance of veterans and young players both coming together to produce and shouldering the workload together in the production and all that. The Dallas model goes well beyond just hitting on your first three picks in 2017. But the fact of the matter remains for the Calgary Flames is, yeah, you need more of that youth to be able to come in and inject some energy into your organization, like we saw Pospisil do, like we saw Zeri do, like we'll see Dustin Wolf do next season and did in his final call-up stint in March to April. You need just more of that. You need to amplify that to the nth degree. And the other element that'll be a larger debate for another day, though, there is the draft versus the development. What made a player successful or not successful? That's, but it's easy to just look at the names on, you know, HockeyDB and go, that player hit, that's a great draft. Although those players didn't hit, that's a bad draft. There's draft versus development. That's a whole nother massive story. But the fact remains, to your point, you absolutely need a franchise player out of this draft if you're the Calgary Flames. And for me, if you can squeeze two or three more serviceable players out of it to varying degrees of impact, whether we're talking about a guy that ends up being a longer term third line center, for example, or a number four defenseman. The fact remains is if you can bring those guys into your organization via the draft, you get them at a lower cap number for a longer period of time, as opposed to going out on the market and getting them. And it just gives your organization that much more flexibility to execute the plan that you have.
The other, and again, there's no like, there's no blueprint that you just follow and it's guaranteed. But, you know, when you talk about, because Carolina had that really good 2015 draft, obviously Hanifin turned into a number of things that helped them. Sebastian Aho is their number one center. But I take a look at what Carolina's done, and I know they have that number two overall pick in 2018, but just pretend for a second that they didn't draft Svechnikov, and he's a huge part of what they do. I'm not suggesting that, you know, he's not relevant. Of course he is. But some of their most important players are players that they've taken in and around where the Flames are selecting in later. Seth Jarvis in 2018 was a 13th overall pick. Pretty important player. Kochetkov looks like he's going to be there. One of their goaltenders going forward. He was a second-round pick in 2019. Jack Drury was a second-round pick in 2018. Marty Natchez was a 12th overall selection in 2017. And Sebastian Aho was a 35th overall selection. So there are a number of core pieces that weren't taken with that top three selection. And Carolina looks like a Stanley Cup contender, bona fide, no questions asked. And so, again, you want to look at the Dallas model. That's great. I think Carolina is a really good model as well in terms of how they built themselves. And outside of Svechnikov, who's a hell of a hockey player, don't get me wrong, but I think Svechnikov and other drafts could have been more of like an 8 or a 9 pick. He is a great player at number two overall, but they don't have that generational player that they selected in the top one or two picks. They've just made a lot of really savvy picks, developed well, to your point, and now here they are under Rod Brind'Amour's tutelage, and they look like they could absolutely win a Stanley Cup this year.
Well, and that's why those are the examples that Craig Conroy is and should be following, because the Calgary Flames, we heard it in the clip, rebuild versus retool. Rebuild is selling everybody you don't want to win, you want a high draft pick. That's not what the Calgary Flames want to do. They don't want to bottom out, sell off every asset they have, and in 6, 7, 8 years, hope that they're competitive again. They feel that they've got the pieces where they can be competitive in the short term and supplant the talent they have now with developing talent coming out of the draft. And that's what makes the retool plan so significant to being to hit on your draft picks that, you know, you're not going to be drafting one, you're not going to be drafting two. But if you're drafting 10, or you've got a second first rounder in the mid-20s, those are the picks that you need to hit on in order to make the retool process work as well.
On the text line at 960-960. This says, I'm not quite sure what the first part is supposed to be, but basically says the Flames get a 9th overall selection, just not good enough to make a difference, just not high enough. This team is so, so, so frustrating. And the point that I'm making is that a number 9 overall pick does not mean that you just shrug your shoulders and say, that's not a franchise player. No, it's maybe not McDavid. But again, I think Carolina and Dallas are really good examples of, do they have, is there a McDavid or a McKinnon or a Bedard on the Dallas Stars right now? No, they just got a bunch of, and again, please don't yell at me. I know they're down 0-2 to Vegas. But they just got a lot of really damn good players. Jason Robertson's not generational. Roope Hintz and Miro Heiskanen aren't generational. Jake Oettinger needs to make a save in the playoffs, but he's like, but these are
all really
good players.
If you've got 6 forwards that are capable of scoring 30 or more goals a season, you're laughing.
And again, Carolina, same thing. Aho is a great player. He is a Selke Trophy. I think he's probably going to be a Selke Trophy finalist this year, and is a very, very nice part of what they're doing. He's almost a point per game in his career, but he's not McDavid. Natchez is a great shooter and is a really nice finisher. And Svechnikov, same thing. And Jarvis looks really... But none of these guys are generational talents. They're just all really good players. And they've all been taken outside of Svechnikov with picks that are not in the bottoming out territory. So that's why I push back on that comment is, okay, the Flames, if they don't win the lottery, the Flames are probably going to select number 9 overall. But at number 9 overall, they need to go and get themselves a franchise player. And that is what, where they are now with the way that this organization has shifted paths, that almost, and then you've got another first round pick and, you know, maybe you're not getting a franchise player, but maybe you can get another really good player in there too. It really puts a spotlight on these next 2-3 drafts for the Flames, starting with this one in a couple of months.
The thing is when you start hitting on these picks too, it's sort of like a snowball effect where, okay, the Calgary Flames this season had two players come into their lineup from the Calgary Wranglers and gave the Calgary Flames a bit of a youthful injection that maybe they weren't necessarily anticipating. But then next season comes along and you've got a player like Matt Coronato and perhaps Dustin Wolf that gives you that same injection. And then the season after, maybe your 2024 first round pick and Sam Honzik, for example, are able to do the same. So suddenly year over year over year, you're introducing prospects into your NHL team, pardon me, that suddenly, yeah, it's not 9 young players coming into the lineup at once, but you have that constant steady flow of young players that are able to come in on entry level deals and make an impact to your team. And that helps everything in terms of cap management, in terms of development, in terms of, you know, when you constantly are adding players and those players are pushing out older players. That's how the retool sort of element works in my mind.
What else we got here at 960-960? This says, Pat, can you quickly explain what the chances are of the Flames getting the first overall pick? And can they move up other than that? My draft lottery knowledge is decent, but their chances of getting the first overall pick are, what, right at 5%?
5%.
5%. Not sub 5%, but right at 5%.
They actually also have a chance at number 2 at 5.2 and number 3 at 0.2. There's two draws.
Yeah.
There's two draws now where you have the number 1 draw and the number 2 draw.
Yeah, exactly. This says, Flames need talent, period. If you look at the Oilers, show me all their picks in the later rounds where they've developed players. Aho isn't a first rounder, but he's their best player. A successful franchise needs that if you're planning a retool. Bang on. This says, Edmonton has two generational players. Where's their cup? Lulz. This says from Bill in Calgary. Yes, they don't have a McDavid or a Matthews, and neither of them have won a Stanley Cup. Build a good all-around team. Take advantage of your picks and see where things land. This says, the thing about these draft picks is they're not going to move into that spot right now. These are 3, 4, maybe 5 years down the road. If it's a defenseman, retool's not going to work. They need to get rid of who they can and bring in other players who want to be here and can play now. This is a very good question that does not have a definitive answer. How do you get the cornerstone pick you're talking about? How do you hit on that pick? Haven't they been trying that every previous draft? Of course they have. There's nobody suggesting that the Flames are trying harder at this draft than they have. It's very easy for us to say they've got to make this a good draft and they've got to hit on their, again, we're just assuming it's going to be number 9 overall. But yes, like, it's not easy and it's not a science and it's not like they haven't tried before. But again, this is really Craig Conroy's first draft. Despite the 2023 draft being under his purview, he wasn't GM leading up to that. This is the first year where his scouting mandates have been in place for a full hockey season. So let's see if he can go out and hit a home run or two at this draft.
And it's really simple math. The higher the pick you have, the greater the odds of that player develops into a cornerstone. Now, I'm going to toss out some quick stats. This doesn't highlight cornerstone, but it might contextualize things a little bit. This is data from 2000 to 2010 because those players have largely come and gone. And these line up with the Heiskanen, Ottinger, Robertson pick. A number 3 pick has a 100% chance of playing more than 99 games in the NHL. That's statistically, it's not actually 100, but it's like 99.5 or something of that sense. A number 26 where Ottinger was taken, that falls to 65%. and number 39 where Robertson was taken, that's down to 40%. Mm-hmm. So that's all data from 2000 to 2010. So when you want to talk about, well, why haven't the Flames just tried to get cornerstone picks? Because it gets harder the lower you draft. It's just the way it is.
Although this year, at number 9, feels like there's a whole lot more variance in terms of what could be there.
For me, anywhere from 3 to about 12 can be interchangeable at this point.
It is Pat and Vickers underway this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Do you have cracks in your walls, floors, or ceilings? Visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. They are all things basement-y.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, time for a Thursday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Steinberg alongside Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. And now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us for our second last Daily Flames Roundtable of the season. Friday will be our final one. And for our second last Daily Flames Roundtable, just going to change it, the approach a little bit. We found out on Thursday morning that Wednesday, April 24th, legendary Hockey Hall of Fame broadcaster Bob Cole passed away just 2 months shy of his 91st birthday. So at the age of 90, Bob Cole passes away. Born in and also left us in St. John's, Newfoundland. Started calling NHL games in 1969, and then he moved into his slot on Hockey Night in Canada in 1973. 45 years of calling games on Hockey Night in Canada, and one of the absolute soundtracks for so many of us who are a part of Sportsnet 960 or who are listeners to Flames Talk and Sportsnet 960. Like, for so many of us, Bob Cole was that soundtrack to hockey growing up, and for so many of us, that hockey soundtrack was just a crucial part of us growing up. And so it was, when somebody passes away at the age of 90, it's sad, but you feel far more comfortable just celebrating an incredible life lived and an incredible legacy left. And that's what we're talking about with Bob Cole. And I just thought with Derek Wills, the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames, would be a perfect time for the three of us to just reflect on the craft and what Bob Cole meant to the game, so on and so forth. So, Willsy, welcome in. And how do you reflect? And honestly, guys, we can just take this wherever we go. No real format or big important topics or questions. Just how do we reflect on Bob Cole's legacy?
Well, for me, the greatest of all time, period. And if there were two play-by-play announcers who made me want to be a play-by-play announcer, on the radio side, it was Rick Jenneret, who, of course, we lost last year. And on the television side, it was Bob Cole. And I remember, you know, growing up as a young hockey fan and sitting on my dad's lap watching Hockey Night in Canada and listening to Bob Cole and Harry Neal. And I have so many fond memories from my childhood. And, you know, Bob Cole was, you know, as you said, the soundtrack for so many of those memories growing up, but watching the game and falling in love with the game. And he had an ability to capture the moment. Like, and there's a lot of guys out there who are really good at it, but I don't think anybody's better at it than Bob Cole was. Just his ability to, you know, rise to the occasion, to help you feel like you were inside of the arena instead of at home watching the game on television, and that voice, that iconic voice, we'll never hear anything like it again. Plenty of people have tried to replicate it to the best of their ability. And if you try to be someone you're not, you're probably going to fail. That's some advice that I was given when I was a young broadcaster back in the day. But, you know, for me, the greatest hockey play-by-play announcer that I've ever heard. I know a lot of people are on the same page with me. Inspired so many others like me to get into the industry because we wanted to be the quote-unquote next Bob Cole, even though it doesn't take you long to figure out you're not going to be the next Bob Cole, but just such an incredible legacy that he has left in the game of hockey. And I think one of the reasons why the game of hockey has exploded onto television as well. You know, the era of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, you know, four decades for Bob Cole calling games on television. He's one of the big reasons why I fell in love with the game. And I think it's safe to say so many others. And I think one of the big reasons why, you know, every single NHL game is now on television, because people want to tune in to watch the two teams play and to listen to, again, there's no other Bob Cole, but to listen to people that to do the job that he did better than anybody, try to bring it home for you. And just, I'm heartbroken that he's gone, but what a life he lived to 90.
You mentioned it, Wilsey, just the greatest of all time, and rightfully a Hockey Hall of Famer, Foster Hewitt Memorial Award recipient. You guys have said the word soundtrack. Yeah, he is the soundtrack to hockey. Like, that's a definitive statement that I don't think anybody can argue. 40 years, he's the voice of what, 3 to maybe 4 different generations of hockey fans growing up at different stages. It's just any sort of iconic moment that you can think of, it's his voice behind that, projecting the emotion and projecting the scene setting, you name it. He's just the ultimate. He's a hockey ambassador. It transcends just the position and the title. Like, he's an ambassador of hockey. We lost a living legend today, and it's just like the soundtrack of hockey, I think, is the greatest sort of compliment you can give him, because again, you think back to almost any significant moment over the course of the last 40 years, it's him on the mic just doing every scene just so much justice. And again, it's a sad day for hockey.
And Bob has been out of the game for a little while now. And it's just, you know, you I guess a few of the things that I think about, guys, is as somebody who has always just been a kind of nerd about the craft of play-by-play and of hosting shows and just of sports broadcasting, I've always been just an absolute nerd for it, right? And, you know, one of the things that set him apart is that, you know, Wilsey, you talked about his voice. His voice was different, and you know, that's there's and this is not to be not to throw shade or anything, but there's a sound, right? There's a sound to broadcasting that I think we've gotten away from over the last 15, 20 years, because I think it's become more and more important for uniqueness. But there was a time when everybody sounded like this, and like that wasn't Bob.
Very cookie cutter.
Yeah, like, that wasn't Bob. He was so different. Just his voice was different. His cadence was just completely off of the beaten path compared to everybody else. And I don't know anybody, and I'm a big fan of whether it's Joe Buck or Pat Summerall or Vin Scully, I don't know anybody who was able to let the other sounds of a game do the talking better than Bob Cole. And I think there's a real incredible art to being able to do that and to not interject your voice. Like, he was, for a play-by-play broadcaster, guys, he was a man of few words. Like, part of that is because it was television, but I always appreciated the way that he would let a crowd do the talking for him when the moment called for it. And when he would say 7 words to describe something that's happening that we're all seeing with our own eyes, and those 7 words were more than enough, because again, you're letting the picture and the atmosphere do the talking on top of what he's saying. It sounds so lame when I say it, but I honestly, growing up with this guy, and you know, you talk about Bob and Harry, Wilsey, same for me. Like, every big moment that I remember growing up about the sport was narrated by this man, and every single one of them was like a masterpiece. Like, I will never forget the words that he said in February of 1998 when Brendan Shanahan needed to score against Dominic Hasek in the 5th round of that shootout. And when he, like, I don't know if another play-by-play broadcaster could have done it better. Just the urgency, what this shot meant, what it meant to every Canadian watching at the time, when he goes, he's got to score. That's all. And just, I don't even want to imitate the way he said it, because it would be doing a disservice. But the way he said it, you just, it turned this moment that we all knew was huge, and it will go down whenever I leave this earth. It'll go down as one of the top 5 or 10 most memorable moments of my life because of Bob Cole and the way that he brought home Joe Sakic's goal 4 years later to make it 5-2, and the way that he let the Canadians in that building in Salt Lake City take home the gold medal win a few minutes later and the stand up and sing Canada and then quiet it down and let the, it was everything he did, Wilsey, and the big moments especially, it was just like he was painting on the fly, and every single time it was just this unbelievable 10 out of 10 masterpiece. I know that we haven't heard him on hockey games for quite some time, and there's been a void because of it. And then when somebody passes away after 90, almost 91 full years on this earth and made such an impact on the game, and especially for guys like you and me who are, you know, you're admittedly a nerd for this stuff as well. Like, it just, it's so much fun to be able to talk about it and really celebrate just what this guy meant to the game of hockey.
Yeah, you talked about him picking the perfect 7 words. How about the perfect 5 words in 2002? Surely, that's got to be it.
Yep.
I mean, for me, that's one of his most iconic calls. And as someone who grew up watching him, listening to him, partner up with Harry Neal, and they were always my favorite Hockey Night in Canada duo. I was lucky enough to work with Harry when I called my first NHL game, filling in for the other guy who I idolized, Rick Jeanneret, calling a Sabres game in Vancouver against the Canucks back in 2010. And Harry shared some great stories with me the night before the game about his time working with Bob. And just to pull the curtain back a little bit. So, you know, Bob was an old school play-by-play guy, and play-by-play has evolved a little bit. There are so many stats, and I would say it's even different comparing TV play-by-play to radio play-by-play. TV, you can let your color commentator jump in a little more often. You can maybe stay away from some of the stats because you've got graphics to tell that story. But on the radio, you've kind of got to do all of it. You've got to describe the play. You know, what side of the ice are they on? Who's got the puck and who are they passing it to? There's so many minute details that because you can't see the game, you need the play-by-play announcer to describe, which means, generally speaking, a little bit less time for the color commentator to jump in. So, you know, comparing radio and TV, they're two very different animals, in my opinion. But, you know, Harry told me that when he was working with Bob for all of those years on Hockey Night in Canada, that when the play was on, Harry better keep his mouth shut. And if he didn't, Bob would give him the Heisman. He would literally stick his hand right in Harry's face and basically say, hey, this is my time. When the whistle blows and the play is stopped, then it's your time. So just try to imagine that. Two of the greatest hockey broadcasters of all time. And once in a while, Bob would have to put Harry in his place. So just incredible. And you know, I remember when I was in the AHL, and we would play the St. John's Maple Leafs quite often, usually 6 times on the road and 6 times at home every year, which meant 3 trips to St. John's. And the broadcast booth, the press box there, was named after Bob Cole. And quite often he would come out and watch St. John's Maple Leafs games and, you know, pop his head into the booth and say hello. And sometimes he had time for a chat, other times he didn't. But I remember also when you'd go in there and maybe play on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, he would also fly Thursday to wherever he was going to call Hockey Night on Saturday. So he always flew back to St. John's. That was his home base. And then on Thursdays, he would fly out to go to wherever, Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, wherever he was calling a game that Saturday night. But just an absolute honor. I wouldn't even say to get to know him. I really never got a chance to spend a ton of time with him, but, you know, had some conversations with him, both in the AHL and obviously in the NHL. And I remember it struck me the first time that him and I were in the same arena calling the same game. I thought to myself, holy smokes. Not only am I in the same building as Bob Cole, which is cool in itself, I'm about to call the same game as Bob Cole. So for me, that was a humbling moment. I was honored to even though I was on the radio and he was on TV, and obviously two very different mediums and different audiences. But that was pretty cool for a young guy who grew up wanting to be the next Bob Cole, realized I would never be the next Bob Cole or Rick Jeanneret, but to still get this, to do the same job that they did at a Hall of Fame level for decades. So yeah, Bob's going to be missed. And I think, you know, today's a great day to celebrate his life and to celebrate his career and to reminisce about his calls. And Pat, when you sent out the topic for today and you asked to go over some of his best calls or most memorable calls, for me, there are just too many. It's not like he's a guy who had one or 10 or 100. He had thousands of memorable calls. So it's tough to kind of narrow it down, isn't it?
For sure. And I mean, I'll even like some of the, you know, going back to just how different he was. And that's whenever I hear the name, for instance, just this, a random name. This is how much this guy resonates with me. Like the name Alexei Ponikarovsky. I can't say it without hearing Bob Cole say it in my head. And you know, listening to on the beginning of Flames Talk, the one of the first things that you hear on our intro on Flames Talk is him calling that Lanny McDonald goal in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final in 1989, and you know, just if you're a Maple Leafs fan, a Flames fan, Canucks fan, like it doesn't matter what fan of hockey you are, he's called a massive moment in your life as a fan of that team. And you know, I only had the opportunity to interview him once. And this is a really cool story because you talk about Rick Jeanneret. And for me, the two were Bob Cole and Peter Marr. And growing up in Calgary, Peter Marr is that guy for me, you know, cause he was, again, soundtrack to growing up. Peter Marr, Bob Cole, one on radio, one on television. And in the lockout in 2012-2013, I had the privilege of working with Peter on the show because we weren't doing NHL games. There weren't NHL games. Peter was still, you know, under contract. So instead of him calling games, he would come in for an hour a day on the afternoon show, on the big show at the time, and co-host with us. It was Bryn Griffiths, Peter Marr, and me at the time. And it was also the 40th anniversary of the Summit Series, the Canada-Russia Summit Series. And what a lot of people didn't know, obviously Foster Hewitt is the voice, and that's the voice that we hear on the Henderson goal. But what I didn't know at the time, and it was Peter Marr who brought this to my attention, was that Bob Cole did the radio for the Summit Series in 1972. So we had Bob on, and honestly, I think I asked one question. I even felt nervous asking one question. I don't believe Bryn was working on the show that day, so it was just me and Pete. And I was like, I'm just going to sit back and listen to Peter Marr interview Bob Cole, or not even interview him, just have a conversation with Bob Cole. And I just sat there, and I remember listening to these two legends of the craft talk about it. And you know, Bob kept on making jokes with Peter, and Peter kept on making, you know, they're both Eastern Canada guys, and oh, it was just so neat. And then to hear Bob with his recollections of the 72 Summit Series, and I didn't know until then that Bob had done the play-by-play on radio for the Summit Series. And so I've walked by him once at the Scotiabank Saddledome, way too nervous to say hi. And that one time having the opportunity to have him on the air, and honestly, one of the top two, three coolest moments ever was just sitting back and kind of being a very, very small part. And I tried to be as small a part as possible of it, of just listening to Peter Marr and Bob Cole talk to one another. It was so neat. So yeah, it was truly an incredible life lived, and truly an incredible hockey career. How about 45 years on Hockey Night in Canada, Wilsey?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Thank you, Wilsey. We'll switch it back to some Flames topics on Friday, but I thought today was a good day to just talk Bob Cole on the Daily Flames Roundtable. So we'll talk to you Friday. Thank you, pal.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
Derek Wills on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Such a cool legacy that he leaves behind as the, again, like for people a little older, it was Foster Hewitt first. And I know for a lot of Habs fans, it was Danny Gallivan. And But then Bob Cole, as things really got more and more national, it's like Bob Cole was at Stanley Cup Finals. And I know that in this city, there is always the Maple Leaf stuff. And we always joke about Toronto getting so much. But I mean, look, the Maple Leafs are that area takes up like a third of the population of Canada. And a lot of Maple Leafs fans in Southern Ontario. And Bob Cole was the early Hockey Night in Canada voice for so long. And then Olympics. And I mean, just think, he was sitting there in Nagano, and then he was sitting there in Salt Lake, and he was the guy for Canadians describing two of the most memorable recent international tournaments, one of them good, one of them bad, and brought them to life from, you know, 20,000 kilometers away or whatever it is in Nagano, Japan. And yeah, I just I truly did appreciate the guy. And my my brother literally just texted me. He's in Hawaii right now and just found out the news and just texted me, dude, Bob Cole. Like literally while we were having, because he just heard the news. And my brother's 6 years younger than me. And same thing, like it's just Bob Cole. That's the guy. That's the guy growing up.
Well, it's like you spent every Saturday night with him for 7 months of the year. 100%, essentially, that's sort of what sort of resonates with me. And that doesn't even get into the playoffs. And you're talking the international calls, the Stanley Cup calls, you name it. But for the most part, growing up, every Saturday night was spent in front of a TV watching Hockey Night in Canada, listening to Bob Cole do exactly what he does and what he does so well.
Rest in peace, Bob. At the age of 90, what an incredible life lived, and what an impact you've made on so many people. That'll do it for our Daily Flames Roundtable this hour as well. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at mercedes-benzcountryhills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.